This Before We Flush podcast was recorded live in our studios with actual human beings. Now, Before We Flush.
Welcome back. After a week off from me, Ricky is back with me today as I've completed another week of vacation. So it'll be a few weeks before I'm off on another one, Ricky.
Yeah, it blows my mind when we get to this point of the year how many days off you take. And I'm not talking about the days off that you would normally take when you're physically present in the studio, but taking the day off. Like, literally, you just leave the studio for weeks at a time during the summer. I don't understand it.
I know. It's as big a mystery as the mystery of Kaiser Lowe getting a job in Texas and then never going there.
Right.
That's the second biggest mystery in the world.
Yeah, I agree. It's good to have you back. I'm glad that you were able to enjoy another vacation. You did a little gambling while you were gone, didn't you?
Yes. It turns out it is gambling whenever you're betting and there's very little return on your investment. So
you got to bet more than 50 cents to get to win anything.
Well, you have to. You have to bet $2. That's the minimum they'll let you bet. In any racetrack in the country, I think except in Louisiana, where they will let you bet a dollar there. But not in Ellis Park. You got to bet $2. We picked two winners, and that wasn't really a good day when there's eight races. So, And the best money that could have been made on a winner, my wife had a chance to pick a horse called Bad Student, and I said, look, that horse, there's no way that's going to win. If you're going to pick on one of the student things, go with Wild Student. That's your better pick. And, of course, Bad Student romps to victory at 11-1, and, you know, we'd have lost, you know, $40, $50 there. So, needless to say, that didn't go well.
Yeah. I don't know why she would even listen to you anyway. If she listened to the podcast, she would know how terrible you are at selecting winners for things anyway. So
that's
her fault.
She obviously shows you she never listens.
Right, that's what I'm saying. That's her own fault for listening to you. If she did any research at all, she would know that you're terrible at picking winners for anything.
And she came to two conclusions. Well, one conclusion was that she said she'd never listen to me ever again on picking a horse, ever. So she's
right.
She's already down to that. And I actually don't remember what the other one was, but it's been a whole week, man. It's been since Friday.
Right.
I can't be expected to remember for three whole days.
I know. That's terrible.
That, and then we went to Moonlight, and see, I think all that food there, it like dissolves the memory or something. I'm not sure what, but
man, that place, first of all, so good.
It is.
And golly, I went with a guy. We were covering Callaway County at the state softball tournament. He worked for WPSD at the time.
Uh-huh.
And I couldn't tell you his name. I'm completely drawing a blank on who it is. He wasn't there very long. Kind of a bigger guy, like muscular.
Uh-huh.
We you know, met a couple times at some events. We went to Moonlight, crushed it. And then a few weeks later, he was gone. I don't remember his name, but that's amazing how things like that leave your memory. It was sometime prior to Andy Waterman being brought on, and was Adam, obviously. I
Greg Miller?
Guy was it? No, it wasn't Greg. It was Greg.
Okay.
For some reason, the name Brad or something's coming to mind. I don't know, but Brandon maybe. I don't know. We hung out for a couple times. We went to Moonlight at the time of our life, and then he left me. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, you got to work with Bidwell. Who's going to put up with that very long?
No doubt.
So I totally get that. Moonlight was great. I tried something, though, I'd never tried. They had this stuff called peanut butter pie. Now, my grandmother used to make it, and she'd have peanut butter pie and melted marshmallows on top of it. So if you wonder how I got to how I am, that's part of it. But theirs was different. Didn't have that. It had like a Oreo crust or something. So I thought, man, I'll try a little bit of it. And, oh, my God, it was incredible, plus the buffet. It was an embarrassing food day for sure, but it was a lot of fun.
Well, I'm really sad that we're talking about this right now. First of all, that you brought up Moonlight, and now that guy's name is going to drive me crazy. And then second of all, the fact that it's 12:30 where I am right now and I haven't had lunch yet.
Oh, yeah, they get you kind of hungry. I'm getting hungry too. But if you're hungry, this will probably put an end to that. I wanted to bring this up because
great, thank you.
Yes, because of technology, and to me, technology. I'm amazed at it. If it was up to me, you know, we would have two tin cans and a string, and that's it. That's all. But the stuff people can come up with, you know, we fly to the moon, went to Pluto on a mission that took, what, about 9 years. It was amazing. And but this probably tops it all, and that is in San Francisco. They're fighting back against public urinators. And I normally wouldn't bring this up, but I can't believe someone invented this. Public works crews have painted 9 city walls with pee repellent paint. And what it does, it makes the urine spray right back on the shoes and pants of those seeking relief. And it's an attempt by the city to clean up what's been a urine-soaked alleyways and walls. And they'll expand it to more trouble spots if it works. But who comes up with pee repellent paint?
I don't know. That is someone got paid way too much money, I'm sure, to sit in a lab and develop that. I've been known at times in my life to be walking from one place to another at a sketchy hour, and you know, maybe use the restroom somewhere that I shouldn't.
That's years ago, back when you were just a kid.
Yeah. I would say back when I was in college, but I was in college for like a quarter of my life.
Right.
So like, that doesn't really help narrow it down at all. But yeah, one particular time I was in North Carolina, and I found a great building that I thought would be a fantastic place, hidden, and I started going and then realized it was probably about one of the worst buildings you could ever pick to do. And so I had to, really evaluate my life at that point. I'm not going to tell you what kind of building it was.
All right.
not a great call by me.
Well, this to me sounds like something that frat guys would come up with anyway. It's like, oh man, let's paint the wall and watch what happens. This would be hilarious.
Yeah.
Somewhere where people does that. So I don't know.
I guarantee you that the guy who thought of it was probably performing the act and then thought, hey, I got an idea here.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, well, it's crazy. I don't know how it works. It's something I'd be willing to just, I don't really want to watch it work. I could really watch it if they want to put a squirt gun up there. I don't want to actually watch someone do that. I just thought it was one of the most amazing things I've heard. Speaking of amazing, let's talk about some sports, sort of kind of what we're supposed to be talking about. And last Monday, even though it was my vacation, I sacrificed a day of it, went to OVC Football Media Day, where the Racers, just like the media picked them, the coaches picked picked the Racers 8th. Probably a fair pick, but talked with Mitch Stewart, talked with a couple of players down there. They all feel that that's way low, that they'll be much better than that. In fact, Katie Humphreys, Jonathan Jackson, they both feel this can be a team that can contend for a championship.
Right, and that's what you want to hear from the players, and I think that the league and the media, they've certainly done Murray State a service by picking them to finish 8th, because that is going to be bulletin board material. Not that these guys necessarily need that, but they are going to have a chip on their shoulder, I would imagine, and want to prove themselves early in conference play. And, the good news is they're going to be well-tested in non-conference. They're going to have an opportunity to really figure some things out and challenge themselves. And by the time they get to conference play, they should have a strong identity, and they should, they should be able to go out and surprise some people. I don't think I don't foresee the Racers finishing 8th. I don't think you believe that they'll finish that low. And this is going to be a good opportunity with a first-year head coach to sneak up on some people. And I think that's certainly to Murray State's advantage. It's a really good league. We've been talking about that for the last few years, really since you and I did our first podcast at OVC Media Day with Casey Brockman a few years ago. We've been talking about the bottom of this league has really come up. With the exception of a team like Austin Peay over the last couple of seasons, there have been very few gimme games. And even Austin Peay able to really turn some things around. Beat Murray State last year, and then certainly they have higher expectations this year. This is just a league where the bottom has really come up, and we know how good the top-tier teams have been, the success they've had. It's a good football league at the FCS level, and I think the national media has done a really good job paying attention to that as well.
Offensively, this should be a team that is as good as any team in the league, to be quite honest about it. And they picked up another weapon in Mark Dodson, a kid who was rated one of the top running backs in the nation when he went to Ole Miss, then decided to transfer to Memphis. That didn't work out where they could get him on, where he could play this year. didn't want to sit out, and he's at Murray State. A lot of folks believe he'll be an impact player this year for the Racers.
Right, and there's no reason to think that he wouldn't. And you know, you can talk about Murray State, you know, as its own entity and the success they've had, you know, with Division I FBS transfers, and particularly even at that position. But, you know, you look at the league as a whole, and there's certainly a precedent for bringing these FBS guys down and having success with them. I mean, you talk about Dyshawn Mobley, the kid from Eastern Kentucky, who was the reigning offensive player of the year. He's an FBS transfer, so there's a big opportunity, you know, here for him, and there's going to be a role. I think that's going to be the most important thing, is that the running back position, I think there were a few questions there, and any help, any depth you can get at that position in this league is certainly going to be a welcome addition, because we do think the offense is going to be good. Mitch Stewart, you know, a big part of why he was selected as the head coach after Chris Hatcher's departure for Samford was because of his offensive prowess and what he was able to do on the offensive side of the football. And I don't think anybody would expect that to drop off the table or to diminish from his role as offensive coordinator, not a head coach.
The big question, of course, will be defensively. I talked with Jonathan Jackson. He loves the new defensive coordinator, Chris Boone, what he's been able to bring to the table, just as a kind of have a new mindset, playing much more aggressive. And he believes that they'll take a pretty big step up this season. And if they do, they don't need a lot of improvement, Ricky. If they can hold teams to 28 points or less, they're going to win a lot of ball games.
Yeah, they are. You know, it seems like that's sort of been the Achilles heel for this program, you know, going back to when I first started covering them, when Chris Hatcher first took over the job. And it's been that they can score with anybody in the country. The problem is, you know, the defense doesn't hasn't been good enough yet to get them over the hump. And, you know, hopefully a new face and a new defensive scheme will be what they need here. And, you know, I'm glad to see a guy like Jonathan Jackson excited. You know, he's a local kid. He's someone that I know a lot of people that cover Western Kentucky football really feel like, you know, could have been a savior, if you will, for this Murray State defense in terms of his skill. And he's going to have a big opportunity in a new scheme to really make a difference. And you know, you've outlined it perfectly. You framed it well so many times that you know, they don't need a team to go out and they don't need a defensive unit to go out and hold teams to 3, 6, 9 points. They really need to go out there, hold them to a few touchdowns or less, and they're going to have a great opportunity to win, because the points are going to come. And the other thing, too, is when you have a really good defense, you do take pressure off the offense a little bit, and that's going to open up more options, going to allow you to do things. You can control the clock. You can run the football with more frequency and more success when you've got a defensive unit that's not putting you in a bind every time in terms of field position, and then also you know, in terms of having to go out and participate in some type of shootout. Because there's a lot of really good offensive teams in this league that you don't want to get into a shootout with, Murray State being one of them.
Now, we also talked in the past about Kentucky fans under Coach Stoops. They were talking about how they would be improved. And it's like, yes, you may well be improved, but there's so many teams ahead of you, it may be tough to catch them. And Murray State, and maybe a little bit of that when you have Jacksonville State, they're loaded. Eastern Kentucky coming back loaded. So is Eastern Illinois. And they're three of the not just top teams in the league, they're three of the top 25 teams in the nation, according to most polls. So it's a tough league for the Racers to contend. They're going to have to be as good or better than those teams.
Right, and whoever comes out of the Ohio Valley Conference as the champion now, you know, you hope and you know, conventional wisdom would say that more than one team from the conference gets into the FCS playoffs. But whoever does end up at the end of the season as the OVC champion will certainly have earned it. And that, you know, kind of goes back to what I was saying with the bottom has really come up, but the good has even gotten better. And there is. I mean, there are three contenders that you just mentioned that I think at the end of the year, if you talk about any of the three of them as the OVC champion, wouldn't surprise people. And I think there's another group of teams there. You know, from 4 to 6, and depending on how you rank them, I would include Murray State, you know, in that second tier of teams that if they got hot, they won it, you wouldn't be surprised. And you know, it's really awesome that the league has gotten the reputation that it has, that they are getting the national attention. You talk about the national polls of the FCS, you know, with those three programs there at the top. But you're right. I mean, any team that wins the OVC, they will have earned it. And, you know, that is a problem for teams like Murray State, you know, Tennessee Tech, teams that are really trying to climb up into the top tier, is that you've got to climb over some Goliaths to get there this year.
Let's talk some baseball. First of all, congratulations. A Braves win yesterday. They won. And as far as I know, they didn't trade any of their players off yesterday. Is that right?
Yeah, no. They didn't trade anybody yesterday. It's a miracle, I know. Yeah, it was. You know, I actually watched a little bit of that game. We're moving, and so I was doing a lot of packing and stuff around the house, and you know, had the game on the whole time. And you know, I'll tell you, man, I've been really impressed with some of these young arms that the Braves have brought along, and you know, the rotation. Really, if some of these younger guys develop, this has got the makings of a really good pitching staff. And you know, it was really nice to see Matt Whistler as well as he pitched yesterday. That's a young guy that I think the Braves have a lot of hope for. But I assume after his performance yesterday, I'll learn today that he's been traded somewhere because he was really good.
Exactly. The big news is I kind of wiped my brow when I saw Johnny Cueto, and I realized the Royals are getting a good pitcher, but I will not have to see him in a Cardinals uniform this season, that's for sure. But that's a big move for the Royals. They're already really good. Many believe they were the team to beat anyway to win the World Series, and to add Johnny Cueto to the rotation can't hurt things at all.
No, it's going to do so much, and that's a pitching staff, that's a bullpen that is one of the best in the league. And when you get a guy like Johnny Cueto, you've just helped your bullpen because he's going to chew up more innings. He's going to you're going to put less pressure on that bullpen more times than not. That's a huge get for Kansas City, and I think really, in my opinion, really makes them the favorite in the AL. I think you look at what they were able to do last year. You add a guy like that. You know, I think right now, all things being equal, they're my pick. But there's still a lot of baseball left to play.
Cardinals continuing to win. In fact, they were going for a sweep week until the Braves upset them yesterday with that 3-2 victory. But Steve Cishek, the Cardinals picking him up from the Marlins, and the thing that the Cardinals have been really good at this season is pitching. I mean, team ERA under 3 is unheard of in this day and time. They have that, and now they've added a pretty good reliever out of the bullpen who can work a lot of innings. That should help a lot.
Yeah, it should. And you know, the Cardinals, they don't always make the big splash, you know, but it always seems like when a guy gets into St. Louis and puts on the Cardinal uniform, he just evolves into this monster that, you know, that no one else was able to see other than the Cardinals organization. That's why they've been so good for so long. I mean, Jason Hayward, you know, really a 250, 260 hitter in Atlanta. You know, he gets to St. Louis and maybe some of the pressure gets taken off of his shoulders. I don't know what it is, but you know, all of a sudden he's hitting 280, flirting with 290, and he's been a different player, a difference maker for you guys for sure. And that's one of the things that I always respect and admire, and just scratch my head when it comes to the Cardinals. Man, you guys, you don't always get the big splashy name, but for whatever reason, when they get to St. Louis, they figure out everything that was ailing them. And they usually end up benefiting the franchise more times than not.
One other baseball note, and that's yesterday's Hall of Fame class inducted. The only hitter in there, Craig Biggio, but three of the most magnificent pitchers that I can remember seeing in Pedro Martinez, John Smoltz, and Randy Johnson. Those three at their peak were phenomenal and very deserving in that Hall of Fame induction yesterday.
Yeah, and you have two of the best big game pitchers of all time. I mean, I think if you started talking about one game, to win it all, and you talked about five or six different names of guys you would want to put on the mound, I think John Smoltz and Pedro Martinez would certainly be in the conversation. Smoltz doesn't get enough credit for what he did for the Braves. You know, obviously Glavin and Maddox, you know, those are the two names people talk about most, and for great reason. But in a big game, I'd rather have Smoltz than either of those two guys on the mound. He was phenomenal, and you know, really the interesting thing to me, the first pitcher in Major League Baseball Hall of Fame history to go in with Tommy John surgery on his resume. And that really speaks volumes to what he was able to overcome and the transitions that he had to face in his career. So, I love John Smoltz. I've got his rookie card, autograph. You know, got a chance to, when I was a kid, to go to a Braves game and have him sign that. You know, always really enjoyed watching him. And it's weird, man, that, you know, I got these guys that I grew up idolizing, and now they're all really old and they're getting into the Hall of Fame, and it makes me feel old. I don't like it.
Smoltz was a big part. I know this is neither here nor there, but I played Stratomatic for decades, and I remember having this draft one year, and I picked up these Braves pitchers. Remember how, you know how the Braves stunk if you're a Braves fan. They stunk.
Yeah.
And I got John Smoltz.
They went worse the first.
John Smoltz, Tom Glavine, Steve Avery. And I thought, oh, what an idiot. You got three Braves on your roster, moron. Well, they weren't laughing in a few years. Those guys, now Avery fizzled a little bit, but man, right. Glavine and Smoltz, they were tough. Good 1-2 punch for a long time.
Yeah, and you know, the thing about that pitching staff, I know John Smoltz, made some headlines not too long ago, talking about the Mets rotation being better than the 90s Braves rotations, but they all complemented each other really well. When you had Smoltz, a guy that was so versatile that, as I said, was probably the best in the big game. You had Maddox, whose control, maybe the best ever. And then you had Glavine, who was a tactician, the lefty. They just all complemented each other so well. And I think that's one of the things that also made that rotation great. And it's going to be really cool in 2018 when Chipper goes in. He'll sort of be, the final guy there from those great Brave teams of the 90s to get his recognition. And I love what John Smoltz had said, that he wasn't going to roast Chipper Jones too bad because he knows he's going to be the last guy. He's going to get the last word in. He's going to get the mic last out of all those guys.
Yeah.
But really, really looking forward to when Chipper goes in as well to go with those three and Bobby. Really cool time. And it is a really in what has been a really rough stretch for Braves fans. It's nice to be able to have this the last few summers with some of these legends going in and remember that we're not far removed from 14 straight division titles.
Very, very much a John Smoltz fan. Glad to see him kind of there at the end pitch with the Cardinals in relief. Just a really good guy. Really, really like him. All right, Ricky, that's going to wrap it up. It's good to be back at work. I don't think I have a vacation next week. I'll have to check on the week after. So looks like at least two straight weeks of shows.
Right, and I've got a lot going on this week, so I'm going to try to I'm going to try to make time for you as best I can. But in the process of moving and meetings, and got a little promotion at work, and so a lot of things going on here too. But I'm going to try to pencil you in if I can.
So did they grease your palm at work?
Yeah.
Get it? Oil.
I got you. I got it.
I didn't know that.
As amusing as you. No, I'm just kidding. No,
so you're moving. Yeah. I didn't know you were moving. So they.
I found a really nice place off of 13th Street in Murray.
Oh, no. No.
Yeah.
Tell me
you
no.
You don't know anybody that lives out there, do you?
Yeah, that's a terrible neighborhood. You don't want to live anywhere on that. It's 13th. Who would want to live on that street?
That's true, yeah.
That's unlucky.
No, we're moving out to the islands. We're going to buy a house out there in January. And so we decided we wanted to move out there, 6 months earlier and kind of get a feel for the area, and that would help us as we look. So we're going to be moving out there Thursday, actually. I'll be moving Thursday and Friday to try to go ahead and, we'll go visit. We've signed a lease. We're going to move, and then that way we'll be able to visit and look at some more houses and stuff while we're out there for a few months and make sure that's where we want to be.
Dude, I'm a country boy. The islands means Hawaii. So what's the islands mean out that way?
It means bodies of land surrounded by bodies of water.
They don't have a name? They just call them the islands?
Well, no. We're going to be moving to Whitmarsh Island.
There you go.
Which is, I'm not sure I want you to know.
I got to know where to send the hit squad. Come on.
Right, yeah. We're going to be moving to Whitmarsh, and Wilmington Island is connected to Whitmarsh by a bridge, and that's where we're going to be separated by the Wilmington River, which is the intercoastal waterway. And we're going to be buying a house out on Wilmington. And the cool thing is we'll put ourselves almost dead center between Tybee Island, which is the beach, and downtown, which is where the fun is. So it'll be a nice nice short, 7-8 minute drive to the beach or to downtown, depending on what we want to do that weekend. So that'll be really cool. But, yeah, we're excited to get out there.
Yeah, I'm happy for you.
I'm not excited about the moving.
Yeah, I'm happy for you. I thought
you'll be happy to know, actually, that this is about 15 miles from where we live now, so I'm technically moving further away from
it. That is good. Well, the only island I thought you might be on Alcatraz, so this is really a lot better than I thought you'd end up. So I'm feeling pretty good about
this. First met me, I would have thought the same thing about myself if I were you.
All right. Well, we'll chat with you Wednesday. Good luck, and you got a busy one, so we'll chat with you then, all right?
Sounds good, man.
So much sports just to talk about. We used to flush it mostly away. With the miracle of the internet, now you can listen to us talk all day. Before we flush podcast, the better way to waste. waste your time. Subscribe to it on iTunes. It doesn't cost you a dime. Talking local high schools in Murray State. Neil and Ricky will set you straight before we flush podcasts.